Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trundy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trundy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trundy Trev Murray from Macquarie, coming live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji country as BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, today we're going to catch up with the daily brother now, Logan Walsh, and he's studying Bachelor of Physiotherapy, and just going to have a yarn about his journey, a general yarn, and got the brother on the line. Logan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing good.
Fantastic, brother. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from, bro.
I'm currently living in Brisbane, and my mob is Kamilaroi.
Okay, fantastic. So, graduated from high school, grade 12, now studying Bachelor of Physiotherapy. How long have you been studying, brother?
So I just graduated grade 12 last year and in first year of uni.
Okay, fantastic. Where'd you graduate from?
I graduated from St. John's School in Roma, so out in the country.
Out in the country, fantastic. And was the vision to become a physiotherapist?
I've always loved sports. I've played sport for a long time, and I've always had a fascination with the body and how it works and the healing and recovery and stuff like that. So, yeah, I've always wanted to do something around that area. And when I got to grade 12 and I sort of had to decide to do something, physio sort of fit and ticked a lot of those boxes. So, yeah, I suppose that's why I decided to do physio.
Fantastic. So studying since what, January, February this year?
February this year, yeah.
Okay, good, good. Enjoying the journey?
I'm loving the journey, yeah. Really enjoying uni at the moment, which is great.
And where are you studying? Which uni?
Australian Catholic University, near the airport in Brisbane.
Okay, fantastic. Support, is there First Nations support? Are you in
there
a group there? Tell us about that space.
So there's a higher Indigenous education centre at the university.
Good.
And it's amazing. So, yeah, any support that you need, if they provide a tutor for you. So the tutors are there to go through assignments with you, explain the tasks if you're not really sure about it. There's plenty of scholarships available at the uni, which are pretty amazing, very supportive. And the ladies there are just lovely, so they're always there and up for a chat if you're ever worried about anything or need to talk about anything, really, yeah.
So it creates a nice platform for a First Nations student to continue with their study with support behind them for success at the end, yes?
Yeah, no, I can't fault the uni at all. Yeah, especially moving from Roma, which is about a six-hour drive, from Brisbane. I'm moving away from family.
Yeah.
And live to a big country. From a small country town to a big city. It was very welcoming, which was great. Yeah.
Good. Are there students, First Nations students, at the uni?
Yeah, there's quite a few actually. At the uni. Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty good.
So building good friendships there with the world, and you support each other no matter what you're studying. But the fact of having black faces at the table in the lunch canteen, whatever the case may be, it's a great ingredient, you could say.
Yeah, I've made a lot of great mates at the Indigenous Centre there. So yeah, I can't say I would recommend going to ACU. It's pretty amazing.
Good, fantastic, brother. What about family now? Where do you sit in the family? You got siblings?
I do. I have two younger siblings. So they both, well, my family moved from Roma to Toowoomba.
Okay.
And I moved from Roma to Brisbane at the same time. So they're both younger than me. My little brother is 16 and my little sister's 13, and they're both going to school in Toowoomba at the moment.
Okay. And so would you be one of the first in the family to go to uni?
My mum went to uni, and she studied marketing and business, but my dad didn't. So, yeah. I suppose the first kid to go to uni in my family, but not the first.
Good, fantastic. And family's proud of you?
Very proud, yeah.
All right, brother. So you go first year, and how many years does it take to become a physiotherapist?
4 years, hopefully.
4 years. Well, you've got to hang in there, my brother, and live for fun. Enjoy the journey step by step, inch by inch. It's a cinch sort of thing, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, well, good yarning with you, Logan. Thank you so very much. Now, Walsh, no relation to Reese Walsh.
I wish. I do pull a few legs and tell people that I am, but I'm not.
Yeah, too deadly. So he's got a grand final this weekend against the Panthers, Brisbane Broncos. So Reece Walsh, claim him your brother, especially if he wins, brother.
Oh, I'd love to see the Broncos win.
Too deadly. Nice yarning with you, Logan. You take care. Keep studying. Head down, butt up, brother.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Deadly yarn there. That's young Logan Walsh. After graduating from high school last year, he's in university and studying to become a physiotherapist and started February this year. So I don't know, coming up to about 7 months, so studying and enjoying the journey, loving the support at university. And look, he just says that it's great support no matter where you go in this country, at what university, there's First Nation support there, so which is great. And also building relationship and friendships with other First Nation students who are studying as well. So it's great to see, a great opportunity. And there's a motivation right there for you mob there, finishing grade 12 this year. Look at uni very, very seriously. Have your say, yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
I see shadows on the hill up beside the old sawmill where my people were killed. I see shadows on the hill. I see the shadows, I see the gallows. What happens in the deep washes in the shallows. They don't want to speak about the first battles. They can only see when they're looking down a barrel. I see the shadows, I hear the shots. I feel the spirit from the fight that never stopped. They want to talk about how far we got,
it never stops.
Where the bodies drop, they build up a parking lot. And they call that survival. Put us on a mission. Force fed us bubbles. They put statues on our land just to worship false idols. Cuffs on our hands just to keep us in a cycle. Blood on their heads, bodies at their feet. And as a warning, they gon' hang them from the trees. Name for the banks, rivers and the streets. Now the shadows never leave. No justice, no peace.
I see shadows on the hill up beside the old sawmill where my people were killed. I see shadows on the hill.
I'm the product of resistance, I embody who survived. I'm the strength of that spirit, I'm the voice of who have died. So who the fuck are you to civilize? No, we can't rely when you recall. I hear your words, I see your lies. And in the dead of night, you can hear those babies cry. You can feel those eyes from the banks where they lay beside. Feel it in your spine when you know you're not alone. Shine bright till the shadows make it home.
Stones, they'll forever be alone. Their killers got all free, but their shadows never leave. I see shadows on the hill up beside the old sawmill where my people were killed. I see shadows on the hill. I see shadows on the hill up beside.
G'day you mob, this is Tanya Kernigan with Trendy Trev and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Rapper Talk, it's your boy MSP, Epole. I ask that for worry, worry belong I like a
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns and Yidinji country. That's BBM, Bumma Bip Media, 19.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saver calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, today, 11 Torres Strait Island Regional Council, Outer Island communities have gathered over local events to commemorate the 86th anniversary of the first councillors' meeting and reaffirm their commitment to the Masik Statement. With that, I'm going to catch up with Yarn now with Mayor Philemon Mosby, Mayor of Torres Strait Island Regional Council. And on the line, Mayor Philemon, good morning. How are you?
Kapu bailu, debe dim, kapu mugi bafenga, kapu bafenga. Are the languages of the Torres Strait. Yes. It's good morning to you, and thank you for allowing me to come on air and to talk about a significant movement, a commemoration of a movement that happened some 86 years ago. My acknowledgement to the traditional owners of whose land we are broadcasting today, their ancestors, elders, leaders, past, present, and emerging.
Beautiful intro. Thank you so very, very much, Mayor Philemon Mosby. Before we start, Uncle, can I ask you, please, who your mob were you from, please?
I'm Mayor Philemon Mosby, and I'm a Kulkalaig from Puruma, Coconut Island, in the central part of the Torres Strait, with ancestral connections to the Meriam people of Ugar, Erub, and Mer, and also my blood ties, kinship goes to Mabiog in the Malulgal nations of the Western Torres Strait, to the top western Gudau Malulgal people, to Boigu Island in the top western islands.
Beautiful footprint. Thank you very much. So we're talking about the, this is over eight decades ago, 23rd August 1937, represented from the region family, formally congregated for the first time in Musick Island to discuss and drive social, economic, political and cultural change. 86 odd years ago. This is powerful. Can you shed some light on this movement there, please, Mayor Philemon?
Thank you. You know, the people of the Torres Strait were entirely sovereign people until European contact and formal annexation of Queensland in 1879. However, we have always been of the belief that we have always maintained our sovereign rights to this state. These events triggered certainly a long debate about sovereignty and governance, the impact of governance on our sovereignty in the Torres Strait. So the movement that happened 86 years ago in the Torres Strait in 1936 marked the first maritime strike, where 70% of the population were engaged and employed in the pearling blooming industry in Queensland, Torres Strait at the time. However, our people who have been engaged and employed in the pearling industry have experienced over decades racial discriminatory policies of the Queensland government. The protector at the time had full control over the pearling boats, over who could work on the boats, who could skipper the boats, how much they got paid, and where they could be, even introduced discriminatory laws across the islands to control the islanders, to control their affairs. So in 1936, the Torres Strait Island people orchestrated a strike against the Queensland government for equality, justice, and for their rights to be respected, not only in the industry, in the pearling industry, in the economic and the employment side of things, but for our people to be able to control and have self-determination and full control over their affairs. So that movement happened 86 years ago. There was no form of governance. We weren't even recognized as a separate race of First Nation people of this country. This is 30 plus years before the referendum.
I'm looking at calculations. That is 30 odd years before the actual referendum. So how active are our mob in the Torres Straits? Too deadly.
Yes, you know, when I look back, I think, wow, our old people, they didn't have the advantage and privilege of, you know, being well-educated like we do today, access to better health, education, technology, the advancements of social media, mobile phones to orchestrate such a movement. But it is recorded that 100% of Torres Strait Islanders who were employed at the time, they all walked off the job. And the way that the strike was orchestrated, the what elders are saying and have been saying for years is that when divers got off the boat and dived down to the bottom, they wrote the date of the time the strike would happen. And that's how, you know, secretly our people had to move, because we were controlled. Our old people were controlled by the government. And if they were found, they would be imprisoned or sent off their island, abandoned off their island for years. So they had to be very, very secretive, but also trust and stand together in unity. I really commend them for what they did some 86 years ago.
Exactly. Mayor Philemon, I'm talking, we're talking true warriors. We're talking, you know, ninja warriors in regard to keeping it all quiet, acting, proacting, and here's a massive statement. The description is voice from the deep. I got goosebumps here, Mayor Philemon.
Yes, so what we celebrated 86 years ago, we came together as a region, as a people. to reflect back on the history and look at what is our older people saying.
Yes.
If they were here today, what are they saying to us today as a nation of people, as leaders of this region and this nation of people? What is the old people saying?
And
Philemon, we could hear the echo.
Yeah, we can hear the echo. I was just going to say, Mayor Philemon, me, you two black men here, we Sabi, our ancestors are still working with us on the other side, aren't they?
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's how the Masik statement got its name, because it was the place that our people assembled, congregated, and stood in unity against the government and against its discriminatory policies and against the protector. And the Masik statement is entitled The Voice from the Deep.
Yeah.
In Kukalgawya, it's Malugu Yangu Wakai.
Oh,
the Voice from the Deep.
And language
in
strong too.
In Miriamir, it's Mirkar, which is the true voice, the voice from the deep. And we as Torres Strait Islanders, we're saltwater fearing. We're saltwater people, seafaring people.
We are, yes.
And, you know, it perfectly illustrates what the divers were saying when they took off their helmet, when they left their pearling boats and said, no, enough is enough. Our sovereign rights are being affected by the way government is treating us, how we're being treated unfairly besides other non-Indigenous people in the industry.
Yes.
And, you know, when we look at that argument 86 years ago, and people might say, Mayor Mosby, what's the big fuss? What's the relevance of it today? As Torres Strait Islanders, as First Nation people, we're still not in control of the economy that comes into this region.
Exactly.
There is an urgency. This voice is still crying from the deep.
Yes.
Calling for leaders to stand up, to practice self-determination, that we, in our sovereign rights, have the right to self-determination, to determine how policies hit our shores, how government investment comes into our region, what is the health status of our people for the future? What is the economical wealth and prosperity and sustainability will it look like in 10, in 50 years' time?
Exactly.
How will it improve the life expectancy of our people so that they will be able to reap the benefits that's in this region? That message hasn't changed. It's crystal clear. What was 86 years ago, that message is still relevant today. And that's why the Masik statement is a fresh declaration by Torres Strait Islander people. It clearly states our desires for self-determination and regional autonomy. This is a living statement from the Torres Strait people to all decision makers, local, state, federal, elected representative of government, agents, and the private sector partners. It's not a local government statement. It's not a Torres Strait Island Regional Council statement. This is the statement of the people, by the people, for the people.
Yeah, beautiful. And we're talking 23rd August 1937. It is still alive today, September 2023. Yes.
That's correct. The aims under the that's outlined in the Masik statement are to achieve self-determination for the people of the Torres Strait and Northern Peninsula area, to freely determine our political status and pursue our economic, social and cultural development, self-government in matters relating to internal and local affairs, and to create partnerships with regional stakeholders, the Queensland and federal governments to achieve the region's goals and aspiration. This is what the Masik statement mandates from the people for leaders of our region to stand together in a culturally united path. To support things like the Uluru Statement, like the voice that's happening, the referendum that's coming up. We stand with our brothers and sisters, Aboriginal brothers and sisters of Australia.
Beautiful.
We strongly believe, have always believed, that Australia is and will always be Aboriginal country. The Masik Statement brings our nation and our region together to support a recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in the Constitution by a voice to Parliament.
Yes.
This is no different. The massive statement, the voice from the deep, is no different to the Uluru statement.
Beautiful.
It allows us to stand side by side with our Aboriginal brothers and sisters to support proper recognition and an amendment and alteration to a constitution that was created some 122 years ago without consultation or any involvement or any process that included First Australians, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Exactly. Mayor Philemon, thank you so very much. Beautiful sharing. Thank you. It sheds light on the power we as warriors of the 21st century are still standing strong with our ancestors standing there with us, and we are working together as an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Thank you for sharing, Mayor Philemon Mosby. All the best to you and your councils, and we'll yarn soon, my brother.
Thank you. Big Esso for this opportunity.
God bless. Big Esso. Yawo.
Yawo.
Beautiful yarn there, a fantastic yarn, very deep, very powerful. And that's Mayor Philemon Mosby, Mayor of Torres Strait Island Regional Council, and talking about over eight decades ago, that's 23rd of August 1937, representatives from the region formally congregated for the first time on Massac Island to discuss and drive social, economic, political and cultural change. We're talking 1937, that's 30 years before referendum where black people were allowed to vote in this country. So how powerful are our Torres Strait Island brothers and sisters? My family there were Dunley Island Arab, and as Mayor Philemon did state, he stands close, side by side, with our Aboriginal brothers and sisters in regard to the Yes campaign and the voice to Parliament. To Dudley, have your say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, and a big shout out to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. We go around the country thanks to NERS. We're based here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM, Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM.
Different band here. Can I get a ticket to the Mangrove Hotel, please? T.I. taxi driver going round and round, a giant traffic circle in a tiny town. Knows everybody's business, what's going on? T.I. taxi driver going round and round.
Ronnie's parked under the almond tree, Kai Kai from Mary's Bakery, waiting for another call to come. Just enough time for a sweet cream bun.
T.I. taxi driver going round and round, a giant traffic circle in a tiny town. Knows everybody's business, what's going on? T.I. taxi driver going round and round.
Victor's doing a late pub run Friday night and everybody's having fun, but he knows he's got to work late and get up in the morning in the taxi by 8.
Hotel, please. I'm gonna walk home.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
I remember the day. Yes, very good morning, New Delhi Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev, Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumbarib Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber calling from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, parallel experiences create a common bond between refugees and First Nation people living in Australia. According to the groundbreaking new research released today by non-profit SSI and Western Sydney University, the shared bond makes refugees and First Nation communities natural allies in progressing reconciliation and in steps towards the proposed voice to Parliament. Look, with that, I'm going to catch up a yarn now with Madison Shakespeare, First Nation researcher, and also former refugee, Dor Kadij Aki. A very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Madison. Hello. Dor, hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. We'd like to ask Mob, who you Mob, where you're from. So who's Madison Shakespeare?
Proudly, well, I've got Mob from a couple of different areas, proudly identifying Gadigal traditional owner, and yes. I'm actually standing on the edge of Bengal and Gadigal country as we yarn today.
Good, beautiful, fantastic, lovely footprint. Dor Kadij Aki, who you Mob, where you from? Former refugee. Tell us your story,
yeah.
Please.
Dor Akechechek, former refugee from South Sudan, and I'm with SSI, Settlement Services International, and can I acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation where I am based now.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. So we're talking about a new, new research, Madison, highlights common bond between refugees and Australia's First Nation. I'm thinking, do you think this is the case of the bond because of First Nation people respecting First Nation people?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. And just to give you a very, very quick background, Trevor, I mean, this research, it was conducted over about a 12-month period and conducted right down the east coast, pretty much, of Australia. And the shared common experiences of First Nation peoples really came out of that. Yes. What was really interesting, though, was the fact that, you know, we hadn't read and we couldn't find a great deal before engaging in the research in terms of Indigenous peoples from overseas, from other countries. So, yeah, and so this certainly, the yarning workshops gave us an opportunity to be able to share and find out about those common experiences.
Well, I'm talking, you could say black on black. When you're talking about somebody who's First Nation from another country, coming to another a country to engage with the First Nation people of that country, you can't beat that.
Have we lost you?
You there?
Dor. Sorry, you there?
I lost Dor. Can you hear me, Madison? No. I'll just try again, see if we get you guys. You there? Hello, can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
He's cut out from Cairns.
Yeah. We'll try and get him back. We have Madison Shakespeare, who's a First Nation researcher, for this bond between refugees and Australia's First Nation peoples. That's the conversation we're having. And at the table also, we have a former refugee, and that's Dor Kadij Aki. And so we try and get him back to continue that conversation at Yarn. But stay tuned, your daily program, National Talk Black. On the line, hey, good morning, guys. You there? Got me?
Yeah, good morning.
Thank you very much. So, look, very important conversation. Refugees reaching out to First Nation people for permission and acceptance, would that be the case? As I said, when you're talking black on black, there's that respect of another man's country, yes?
Yes, I would agree.
Yes.
And it's mainly on the fact that there are shared histories as well.
Yes.
Histories of colonialism, displacement, dispossession, and, racialization. Mm. And the fact that newcomers here, refugees, find allyship against that oppression with their First Nation people. And it's also about understanding the cultural safety and the continuity of that tradition that we bring from different countries as we settle here. So to be able to give respect to the owners, those who have cared for the land and looked after the land over 60,000 years, is something that is deeply acknowledged and respected, and also we remain humble and considerate of that.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dor. And is what I'm thinking precisely, when you look at it, for all refugees, when communication with the Australian government, First Nation people have got to be at the table in regard to that discussion, don't you think?
I do think that it is important that they are at the table and that every voice that has experienced under, you know, privileged and has been silenced before needs to have their voice heard in decisions that affect them.
Yes.
So we are living in 2023.
Exactly.
And 21st every century. Every other six prime ministers in the past, whether be it from either side of politics, they have committed themselves and publicly come out to say that we need to have a voice.
Exactly.
So now is the time.
Yes,
indeed.
Exactly.
I completely concur.
Thank you, Madison.
I agree with you, Dor.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely. Madison, when you look at the, can you tell us the process in regards to communication between First Nation people and refugees? Has this always been, or has it just started, or it hasn't been existent as such?
You cut out a little bit, Trevor. Can I just ask you a question again?
Yeah, I'm just talking about the process in regards to communication between First Nation people and refugees. Has this always been the case?
Well, certainly, and this is that's a really difficult question to answer in many respects, because I think certainly when living in specific areas, so you know, in different regions, you know, there's been really really beneficial ongoing you know, communication and allyship, actually a deep allyship in many instances. But certainly in this particular, you know, sort of context, my experiences have really, really been formed over the last 12 months, sort of going and having yarn workshops with refugee peoples on country. So looking at place-based specific custodianship of country, so how we can together care for country, and learning about country, because, you know, Australia is you know, a new home for many, many people. But what does that mean? Because, you know, certainly one thing I found, every refugee person across five workshops that I convened, everybody wanted to know how to care for country. They wanted to know more about place-based practices. They wanted to know more about history.
Good.
And so I think that there's, absolutely, there's a deep respect.
When you look at the fundamentals, I mean, if you come to my house, well, you're going to have my permission first. Let's sit and have a cup of tea and have a yarn if you're going to be renting a room off me, sort of thing, you know, whatever the case might be. So if you look at the bigger picture, refugees come to this country, yarning to the government, but okay, black people, First Nation people of this country should be at the table.
Totally. And certainly something that's also sort of come out of today's forum, because we had an opportunity for community elders to yarn together with with professionals, but also with representatives across different refugee communities. So it's been the most enriching time for this research, you know, just before the referendum. One thing that's really come to the fore also is that there is a deep allyship and there's a deep respect for actually, you know, having us as First Nation peoples, rightfully, you know, provide opinion and inform decisions through our lived learned experiences and our knowledges and our histories, in terms of our self-determination, you know, and our future. So,
exactly.
I mean, it's certainly pertinent, and you know, it's interesting because it's deeply understood. It seems to be deeply understood by what came out of the yarning early this morning, in terms of, you know, there's actually no question.
Exactly.
Nobody is questioning it.
Exactly.
In terms of, it's it's that deep understanding of why it's necessary. Yeah.
Dor, back to you. And in that discussion, when refugees are communicating with First Nation people and the bond is becoming stronger, well, there also creates a nice platform for respect of the country and the First Nation people. And then if given the yes, the tick of approval, so to speak, that they do live here, refugees become Australians as such, then they will always respect First Nation people and the country they're on in regarding not committing crime, paying their taxes, and ticking all the boxes as Australians. Yes?
Indeed. And that kind of sense of belonging that's based on Australianism has to be based on the fact that we live on a country that is belonging to the First Nation people.
Yes.
And so it has to start with a connection to land. The Yarn Circle has kind of encouraged newcomers
yes.
to then connect with that from the environmental sense, connecting with the nature, but also from a spiritual sense, connecting deeply with ancestors who own this land and the histories that have preceded us to these days. And so it then created a deep sense of cultural exchange and you know, practices that are very much respectful, reciprocal relationships. And then from there, it uncovered many, many similarities, like the food is quite diverse.
Yeah.
The people arriving from different nations are quite diverse. So is the Aboriginal people prior to, you know, the white settlers. They were diverse and still diverse today. And so it created this very natural alignment.
Natural alignment, I like that, exactly, yes.
Yeah.
But I said the similarities and the culture, we are connected in more ways than one, and that's why you can't be black on black. It's great to be at the table with refugees of the First Nation people and the communication, the bond. Madison, thank you. Dor, thank you. I think it's a great concept and idea. This should continue, but I think the push for having First Nation people at the table in regarding refugees applying for residencies, First Nation people need to be at the table from this country, yes.
Absolutely, and really, you know, integrally, like, it needs to be, when we're looking at the many sort of education processes that are involved in terms of citizenship, there need to be not just theoretical, you know, sort of observations put in place of First Nation peoples, but we need to be up there yarning with, working with, and in a sense, mentoring new Australians looking after country. And that sort of collaboration, and it must be First Nation led. It can't be something that's taught in a textbook, because most textbooks don't actually contain our histories.
Sure, exactly.
You know, they're white histories.
But if that mechanism was put in place, when you eye to eye, looking into an elder, and they're giving you permission to come to this country and stay here and abide by the rules, I think that gives you a bit of meat on the bone in regarding that respect and that endearment and to live here and respect the rules and laws.
And,
you know, it just meant it, doesn't it?
And walking on country, walking on country and connecting with country. And then ancestors, they'll take over and do the rest.
Exactly.
You know,
they're
very wise. And as I was saying, sort of, you know, through this research, you know, we have common ground, and that common ground is country.
Exactly.
You know?
And I think, Dor, you'd understand
too.
Thank you
so much for the opportunity.
No, that's fine. And I just
thank you. And I think the four things that are integral to that, as my final questions, are that we explore cultures of the First Nation.
Yes.
We immerse in the natural environment of the First Nation.
Mm.
We absorb the spiritual connection, and we elevate the political aspects of the First Nation people.
Beautiful. And I'm just thinking, black on black, Dor, you would understand, if you muck up on country, you may get a spear in the leg. You know that.
Oh, no, that's getting pretty deadly in a bad way.
Yeah, well, that's right, exactly. Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about, respecting on country. Respecting on country, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I was sharing earlier in the forum about the stories that I shared with a black brother.
Yes.
My first encounter with a First Nation person when I was going through high school.
Yes.
And Jake will call me my brother. Let's have a yarn. And we'll talk about those histories.
Yes.
The struggles, the connection to the country and spirit. And I deeply respect
Thank
that.
Thank you. And that's right, brother.
Gave me a lot of knowledge.
Thank you. Beautiful.
Wonderful.
Well, you gave me a lot of knowledge. Good yarning with you both.
Thank you so much.
I call you my brother.
You.
Madison, my sister. Thank you very much.
Looking forward to community connecting with you and yes. hearing our story. But have a lovely morning.
Take care. All the best. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Beautiful yarn, deadly yarn there. Madison Shakespeare, First Nation sister, and she's a First Nation researcher on regarding the highlighting the common bond between refugees and Australia's First Nation people. And look, First Nation people should be at the table in regard to refugees coming to this country. Of course, it's our country. And then yarn with Dor Achik. He's a former refugee, and he's at a part of the conversation as well. A beautiful conversation, and look, have you say, you mob. Yarn up strong, add to the conversation here. National Talk Black, deadly number here, 1-800-422-416.
We got Talk Black with Uncle Trevor, Murray from the Curry. Call in on 1-800-422-416, 98.7 FM, BBM.
Yes, very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, 20 Trev, Murray from the Curry. Coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns and Yidinji country. That's BBM Bumba Rip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to News National News Radio Service. Yarn up strong, your mob, too deadly. We're going to catch up a yarn there with deadly artist Amy Flannery. We're talking a new ace at Dusk series launches with an epic exhibition and art party, Exchange 23. And we have Amy on the line. Amy, good morning, sister. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. And before we start, let the mob know who you mob, where you from, sis?
So my mob is Wiradjuri. I'm from Central West, New South Wales, but I'm now based on Mongol country in the inner west of Sydney.
All right, fantastic. Now, just confirming, so you're one of the artists performing at the Ace at Dusk series launches with exhibition and art party. So you're going to be pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty keen. I've got a whole heap of deadly dancers and singers that are going to be performing alongside me, so yeah. I'm pretty excited.
Okay, and who choreographed the movements?
So everything that you'll see from my performance is a collaboration of all the artists. So I've got Jaya Ren, Brianna Kemmeling, Justine, David Biondiotto and Akayla Newman.
All right, beautiful. So, look, it's a great opportunity to perform. When we're talking, looking at dance, just painting a picture, is there storytelling or is it a visual thing to see? Then you'll pick up the movements and what they're for, or is there a story behind it? That's what I'm asking.
This project is really based in like a celebration of First Nations people and okay. how resilient we are.
Yes.
So it's a bit of like a pop tune, and all the lyrics have stemmed from a brainstorm that all the dancers had together, talking about how we're so adaptive, we shapeshift, we transform, we're grounded in culture, but we celebrate who we are.
Fantastic.
That's kind of the vibe of the piece, yeah.
And that's a day gig, or how long does the gig run for? How long does the Ace at Dusk series run for?
It's just one night only.
Okay.
And it'll be, 6 to 10, and there's a whole heap of artists that'll be performing.
Oh, good, fantastic. But something like this sounds so deadly, it should be taken on the road is what I'm thinking, Amy.
Well, I reckon too.
Fantastic. And so with this gig and you're freelancing, what's on the horizon? What happens next week, next month?
Well, I'm currently actually also doing a gig with Sydney Theatre Company and Mugglin Performing Arts.
Yes.
And I've been Associate Sound for The Visitors, which is on at the Opera House
Good.
At the moment. So okay. that's kind of what's happening at
You're
the moment.
Busy bee, sister.
Yeah.
Dancing right through life to different stages, and they say, if the music is the essence of love, then play on. Of life. So that's what you're doing, my sister. So fantastic. Congratulations. A bit of background. So where did you perform before?
Yeah, so I studied at NAISDA.
You did.
And since then, I've performed with quite a few different groups.
Mm.
So I dance all the time with a community group here on Darug Country called Janowi Dance Clan.
Yes.
Also with a group from the mountains called Wagana.
Okay.
I have a collective. I'm a part of a collective called Lost All Thoughts Collective.
Yeah.